Okay, so let's talk briefly about the role of Kabbalah in PSOC. So,
Do one be one.
Ellie wants me to define my terms. So there's two very different there's a few very different ways that that Kabbalah could enter into PSOC. So if you remember, I've outlined this for you before, but what are, right, at least in my mind, what are the three main factors in all PSOC? We've talked about this before. Analysis of the primary sources, assessment of precedent, and what did earlier postum say about this topic, and then an assessment of
Applying it.
custom, of must, of minhag. Kabbalah, it's worth noting, can enter into and enter into all of them. Correct. They can Psa can enter into all of them. In what way could it enter into all of them? Like, right, let's lay this out theoretically first. What? Okay, that's the easiest, right? Which is that sometimes there are minhagim that are generate that are based on Kabbalah. So obviously, to the extent that minhag is important, it can be influenced by Kabbalah. And furthermore, not just that, but you, if Kabbalah influenced the way we paskin, then it's not just a minhag, just like it's not just a Kabbalistic minhag, but it could be a halachic, right? A tradition to follow a certain halachic psak, right, which was pushed along a little bit by Kabbalah, which is going to be, right, then things are going to get a little bit complicated. In general, in general, what are the two places though that people discussed? Where in the sort of framework do people talk about Kabbalah and psak in this framework? So one is the Zohar. Now, the Zohar, if they're talking about the Zohar, usually how are they talking about it? At what level? At the level of precedent, or are they incorporating the
Primary
Zohar
source.
into as a primary source?
Primary
A primary source,
source.
right? Often Zohar, the question is it a legitimate primary source?
Rashbi.
However, you'll also find people invoking Kabbalists and Kabbalistic texts at the level of precedent. Meaning they're trying to figure out how we paskin, and then what weight do we give to, let's say, the Arizal. And in some cases, it'll be the Zohar will be functioning in this level also, right? Which is to tip the scales, but not necessarily as the Gemara, but tip the scale in how we paskin within an understanding of the Gemara, right? So when you talk about Kabbalah Psak, you have to realize that some people are talking about it at the level of do certain texts, usually the Zohar, provide a primary source. Sometimes people are talking about whether it can be part of the conversation at the level of precedent, and sometimes it's going to affect things by having bolstered or created minhagim. Right? So when we talk about the role of Kabbalah, we mean Kabbalic texts and traditions, but depending on which text and tradition we're talking about, it could be functioning at different levels. So in general, the there are three main camps in terms of how happy we are to incorporate Kabbalah in Psak. If I had to do, if you wanted three camps, what would they be?
Not at all.
Not at all. Good. Who is the not at all camp?
Rabbi.
Famously, there are many people. That doesn't count. It's someone who is aware of Kabbalah, might even believe in Kabbalah, but doesn't think it's part of the halachic discourse. Remember, I should make this point clear, right? Whether or not Kabbalah enters into Psak has no, has very little to do with whether you're a mystic, right? That, so what? I'm saying this has very
That's the
little to
point.
do. This has very little to do. Again, this is an important point. It's very, right? Whether or not Kabbalah has a role in Psak has nothing to do with someone is a rationalist or a Kabbalist. You could be a Kabbalist and think that it's true philosophically, but it's
Not for
but
us.
it's not relevant halachically. Now, who is, so many people take this position, but probably the most famous, because he coined the fighting, the motto of the don't incorporate Kabbalah into Psak camp, was the Chatam Sofer, Chatam Sofer.
Was he Kabbalistic?
Yeah, he quotes Zohar. It's not his problem. That is no problem. But he says, very simply, Shelo yadana. Shelo yilag od al minhag Yisrael shenel lam tam amenu ki makor mayim chayim amin ovit. Right? You shouldn't make fun of minhagim because they come from holy place. V'ragilani lomar, and I am accustomed to say, they call it mefak peik al nimusim u'minhagenu tzarech b'dika acharav. Anyone who questions a single minhag, you have to check whether they are heretics. Ki misha taradom natu v'yirad Hashem right, to check his Jewishness, you know, he's like, you know, yeah, etc. But he says, but I tell you that anyway, if you mix Kabbalah and Halacha, chayav mishum zoreya kilayim, you have violated kilayim. Pentukdasha milaya hazera sher tizra. Right? Kilaya kerim, right? When you plant things that shouldn't be mixed together, and what's the result? What do you have to do? Pentukdasha milaya. What do you have to do with it? Burn it. Then burn it.
Does it include the living things, or that's just for plants?
Now he says, however, but just in case here, you're going to say, aha, the Chatam Sofer was a philosopher, because apparently that's a binary. No. His next line, vich ulu aumatze. Right? So he says, Kabbalah, what's the problem? Both are kosher, but they can't be mixed. I lamazam arev sifrei higayonim deretor. We mix philosophy and Torah. Over al choresh shor v'chamor yachdav. V'imhu manig Yisrael manig b'kilayim. Right, and if you are a leader, you are leading with kilayim. Okay, so those are his fighting words. So he's like Kabbalah are both, you know, fine. You just can't mix them. But I'm just going to guess, I'm not sure, I'm going to guess with 99% certainty that the Chamor here are philosophers in his mind. I'm just guessing, knowing the Chatam Sofer elsewhere. And he says, so if you dare to mix that in, it's a different type of Kilayim. But this should highlight the fact that this is not like...
We're in some hot water.
Right, it's not like you say, oh, that person believes... and lives his life al pi Kabbalah, therefore he clearly thinks it's part of the halachic decision. The Chatam Sofer is not like that. He just thinks that these are two different disciplines. So Kabbalah is very important for him. This has nothing to do with it. Right? I want to make this point very clear. Right? The question of whether Kabbalah is relevant in Pesach has nothing to do with who do I think, right? Do I agree with the Yaakov Emden that the Zohar is not written by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai? That has nothing to do with it. The Bichal. It has nothing to do with it. At the other extreme, you have tshuvot like, just to pick one at random, the Masa Binyamin. Masa Binyamin introduces Zohar seemingly at the level of precedent. Well, somewhere between precedent and canonical source. I will just read you his line if you would like to see what the other opposite stream looks like. And this is also found in the Beit Dino Shul Shlomo. It's found in the Michtav Chizkiyahu of the Stei Chemed. Haderach Hasheni Leilech Acharov Minyan Ubinyan. If you want a way to follow the majority of Poskim, Harei Lefanecha Zohar. Just follow the Zohar. Shehu Shakul Yoter Mikol HaMichabrim. That he outweighs all other authors. Nikuda, Sof Sibor. Shachar Chatim Atamud. Any source, right? He doesn't quite, right? Meaning, this is the weird thing, is he clearly thinks he's a Tana, but we'll get to that. But he says, any source post Talmud, all of them on one side, Zohar on the other, the MU, and in case you wonder why am I using a scale? Am I just imagining that? He says, no, next line. His next line. The MU, kol amichabrim bekaf moznayim echad. If you put all the poskim on one side of a scale, the sefer hazor livado, and only the zor, ya'ale bekaf shnia machria et kulam. It outweighs all of them. Varehu adif merov minyan ubinyan. And you follow, and he claims it's from the Beit Yosef, that it goes, the Zohar against all other authors. And then he says, obviously, in his case, the case he's talking about is Kavachomer, the Yishon Aneinu, the Ikar Avata Tuva, the Rabbim Shemaskim, the Rezor. He said, but that's not usually what it is. Right? He's talking about a case where it's a Machlokes HaPoskim. It's a legitimate Machlokes HaPoskim. But he's like, once the Zohar goes on one side. Masat Binyamin. But it's also in the Masat Binyamin Tshuva Samach Bet. But it's also in the Tshuva Beit Dino Shel Shlomo or Chaim Yud Bet. It's the Michtav L'Chezkiyahu Simen Zion. It's in a lot of places. It's a lot of places. What? Variations. The middle position. What if you wanted a middle position methodologically? What would a middle position be?
We take it into account.
Right. So you could have variations, which is either he's another opinion to take into account, or the slightly stronger version, which becomes pretty standard. It's basically the position of the Beit Yosef and the Mishnah Brura, which is, if it contradicts halachic sources, we don't follow it. But if halachic sources are neutral on it, or perhaps balanced, then it holds particular sway.
What do we define as balanced?
So we'll see, but right, that would be the middle position. Now, in general, most popularly, I think when you find these discussions, Now, how do I know that that's what the Zohar holds? Because remember, in the Akdamah of the Beit Yosef, he tells you all the Rishonim that he quotes, and he tells you, V'ktzat mekamot ma'amarei HaZohar. And sometimes he quotes the Zohar, which tells you that he thinks, yeah, that it is at least a valid halachic source, at least under in some instances. Now, if I asked you, so this is like broadly speaking, but if you wanted to distinguish between Zohar, let's say, and Arizal, which would you think has more power?
Which one has, or which one is perceived as having more
power? It would be perceived by Poskim as having more power.
As in times of Rishonim, at least, like at latest.
So interestingly here, right, what you get in Poskim is the following. Certain Poskim, like we read in the Masa Ben Yamin, takes it as given that Zohar wins everything, presumably mm-hmm. because he's saying he's a Tana. Yeah. Right? And therefore, Arizal, to the extent that he's important, or later Kabbalistic sources, not Lav Dafka Arizal, but Arizal is going to be a big one, but Arizal, Ben Yishchai, whatever, sure, he doesn't really have so many Kabbalistic Psakim. You need someone who writes Kabbalistic influenced Psakim, like the Arizal. Exactly what it sounds like. Halachic practical rulings, which are influenced by Kabbalistic thought. Whatever. Sure. All that. Whatever. So there are some, like the simple pshat of that Masa Ben Yamin, that think that this is a Zohar thing. Right? Because it's viewed as Tanitic, so like any other later Kabbalistic sources, maybe they are part of the discussion, but they don't have that power. Others, though, interestingly, reverse it. Punkt say the opposite. Why would you say the opposite? I mean, at least get the contours of the argument out. Why would you think the opposite? Why do you think Zohar is weaker than, let's say, the Arizal?
If the Zohar was like made up, then the Arizal was
yeah,
like,
so you're thinking, like, what if I don't believe in the Zohar? Not like that. I'm not saying that at all. I want you for a moment to bracket the question of whether, of the historicity of the Zohar. I want you to think within Poskim, who accept the Kabbalistic tradition, why they would give less weight to the Zohar. Because obviously, the elephant in the room is that people who are questioned, who suspect the validity of any Kabbalistic tradition, are going to be hesitant to incorporate it into Psak. I get that. But I want to say, most Poskim you're reading, that's not true for them. Okay? Just know that, right? Is this clear? You can deny it if you want, yeah. But you know that it's true. Most of the postgame you're reading, whatever you want to say about whatever, that's not their reality. But why might they give more weight to, let's say, a later Kabbalistic source like the Arizal than to the Zohar?
Like, in general, we have a rule like the postgame, like the later sources, they have the earlier sources.
So variation on that. It's actually stronger than that. So Ari is on the right track, but it's actually stronger. It's not just halachic kibatrai. The Vipassana later sources, it's a stronger thesis.
Except that they know that they're arguing that...
Well, why do they think the Zohar is weak, and why do they think the Arizal is strong?
Because the Arizal, he didn't...
Start with the Zohar. Why do they think the Zohar might be weaker?
Because, if you just look at the history of characteristic.
No, this is not this characteristic. You're not listening to me. Nope. It's because there's a klal in the Gemara that if it's a machloket, Reb Shimon v'chaveiro, ein halacha k'Reb Shimon. Because we have a rule in the Gemara that Reb Shimon bar Yochai usually loses out. And therefore, it's weaker. Why? Because he may be a Tana. Right? Even if you think it's written by the Zohar, but that would make it weaker because, according to the Kali Psak of the Gemara, so it would be like telling me that something is Beit Shammai. It would be a legitimate Tanaitic position, but not Lahalacha. But once you say that, why would you give more weight to, let's say, the Arizal? Because the Arizal, who lives post-Talmud, if he says a tradition, even if you think it goes against halacha, they trust the Arizal to have known Shas well enough to not have endorsed the position that was against the Gemara. Right? So some people in Echanami give more weight to the Zohar, but some say no. Maybe the Zohar is actually weaker in that sense because if it's Tanaitic, it's the position of a Tana whose position we normally don't accept. And therefore, in cases where the Gemara seems to go against it, that's evidence that we follow our normal rule and don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon. Whereas the Arizal, he says something post-Talmud. And so this is a variation on what Zucker said. Not just, the Ariz later, but the Ariz post-Talmud, and therefore would himself be bound by the Psakim that became normative with Chatimara Talmud, whereas Reb Shimon Bar Yochai would not be. You understand? There's actually a very clever formal argument. Right? It's a very... But you got to understand. This is why, again, I'm going to say this for the millionth time. It's important to understand this because an argument like that, someone who says the Zohar is weaker than the Arizal because of what I just said, his belief in the weakness of the Zohar's halachic source is predicated on its belief in its strength as a philosophic text. Right? Specifically because he thinks it's a Tanaitic source is why he knows that we have a klal in psak that weakens its practical application. Right? So I'm telling you simply to highlight the fact that your assumptions that the role of Kabbalah in psak has something to do with whether someone believes in any given Kabbalistic tradition is not true. It's a formal methodological claim. It's a formal methodological claim. Right? Is Kabbalah a source for halachic argumentation? Is the Zohar a source for halachic argumentation? Again, the Chatam Sofer fully believed in Kabbalah. You saw what he said about the opposite. He just thinks it's Kilayim. He thinks that these two texts are doing different things. And to give you a dugma, and I'll take Zucker's question, it's the same way when you see poskim who insist, b'charifut, that you cannot paskin based on an agadic text. That's not because they think the Agadah is not important. It's not because they think the Agadah wasn't written by the Tanaim or the Amoraim. It's simply because they think these are different types of texts. Right? You have to remember, methodology, right, methodologically, what is a legitimate source in halacha does not necessarily correlate with how important you think it is. And therefore, theoretically, you could imagine a position, which I don't think is crazy at all, of someone who is, let's say, personally more skeptical of Kabbalistic traditions, who would still grant it weight because, whatever, if it was incorporated by the Beit Yosef, so now I have to take it seriously because it's in Shulchan Aruch, and that's how precedent works. Or a custom emerged, and Klal Yisrael is knowing this way. Right? Just because someone might personally have qualms about certain, you know, traditions, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't take it seriously. Lehalacha. Because, right, it has nothing to do with it, right? If the Beit Yosef took it seriously and then Paskin a certain way, and you grant weight to Shulchan Aruch, which I think most of us do, then your psak may be influenced indirectly to Shulchan Aruch, regardless of, you know, of how. So this is why I wanted to point out that the methodological questions are not philosophical questions. These are different questions. These are fundamentally different questions. You have to understand that. Okay? Is that clear? It's a very important methodological point that people miss completely. Yes, Zucker.
So I was going to ask, for someone who, like, denies the validity of, like, certain Kabbalistic works or whatever, would it still have, like, significance in the halakhic?
Okay, so, again, so I'm just giving broad contours of the argument. Let me give you, an example of a posek for who this creates a lot of trouble for. Okay? Reb Ovadia. So I'm going to oversimplify this. Reb Ovadia, as Rabbi Benny Lau has pointed out in his book on Reb Ovadia, which Reb Ovadia put Hascham on, right? Benny Lau's dissertation was on the halachic methodology of Reb Ovadia. He did it in Reb Ovadia's life. Reb Ovadia put Hascham on and said, yes, this is my methodology. Whoa. So, okay, check. He notes that Reb Ovadia had a few guiding principles in Pesach. One was follow Beit Yosef at all costs, under all circumstances, because the Beit Yosef is the Beit Yosef. Yes. A second one is that he was very Ashkenazi when it came to Kabbalah, and he felt very strongly like the Chatam Sofer, which is...
not for halacha.
Yeah. Not for halacha. What's the problem? For him, that practically meant that who were the two poskim that he always had to fight against? Not the Beit Yosef. He never fights the Beit Yosef. What?
Doesn't Beit Yosef
no. Is the... which two major Sephardi poskim are heavily influenced by Kabbalah and their Pesach? Not just like the Zohar, they bring it in randomly, but two major ones. Ben Ish Chai and Chida. Ben Ish Chai and Chida. And the Ben Ish Chai, you have to understand, for many of the communities they do the Mizrach, is like the posek. And therefore, a third factor, and these relate, in Vajas Pesach, was unifying, creating a pan-Sephardi halachic culture, which included Yedut Mizrach. On this point, specifically all three of those points, as they merge, created a tremendous amount of tension between Reb Ovadia and several poskim from Yedut Mizrach, because they, A, felt they were not bound to the Beit Yosef, B, they thought Kabbalah was part of Pesach, and three, therefore they did not appreciate being shoehorned into this pan-Sephardi thing that would push them towards the Beit Yosef, away from the Kabbalistic influence Pesach of the Ben Ish Chai and the Chida. So the Moroccan poskim and the Taimani and some of the Taimani poskim and the Egyptian poskim and the Tunisian poskim, all those, but really the Moroccan poskim, spent a lot of their life fighting Reb Ovadia tooth and nail. The most famous of those poskim was Shlomo Messas, who wrote a book called Shemesh Umagain. Why is it called Shemesh Umagain? Because he was protecting his tradition from Reb Ovadia. He was a shield against Reb Ovadia, right? No, Magain. Shemesh was his name from, right? It was like a play on his name. Yeah. But Magain was, Shemesh, I think, is a play on Shlomo Messas.
Shemesh
Umagain. I think the Shemesh is a play on Shlomo Messas. Shalom Messas. Shalom.
Umagain.
Right, but the Shemesh part is Shalom or Shlomo Messas. The Magain is, we are protecting you, protecting us from Reb Ovadia. The other major post he had fights in with this was Reb Mordechai Eliyahu, who was the Sephardic chief rabbi before him, who was very influenced by the Ben Ish Chai. Now, this creates a slight problem for Reb Ovadia, because sometimes the rules work together. Sometimes they clash. Right? Sometimes these rules clash. And one of the times that it clashed the most for Reb Ovadia was the bracha of Hanotein Layayif Koach. Because Notein Layayif Koach appears where in Shas? Well, this is a trick question. Right, remember it. Remember, I talked about it last year, which was it doesn't appear in our Gersh in the Gemara. It does appear in the Gaonim. The Ashkenazi tradition says Notein Layayif Koach following the Gaonic tradition, claiming it's in the Gemara. The Sephardi tradition, the Beit Yosef, said don't say it. The later Sephardi tradition said say it. Why? Al-Pi Kabbalah.
Al-Pi Kabbalah meaning
Because they're Arizal. So they're Arizal. Because they're because of the Kabbalistic tradition. This created attention because, according to Rabbi Avadya's rule that you should follow the Beit Yosef, should you say Enotin Lakoach? No, according to this rule that you shouldn't say, you shouldn't paskin based on Kabbalah, should you say it?
No.
Elamai. What's the problem? The Birkei Yosef, the Chida, explicitly says, so what? He says, I quote, this is gets Rav Avadya a little angry, Kim lunch ilu ra maran dat kodesh arizal hu yodesh yesh levarcha. If only the Beit Yosef had seen the Arizal, he would have said it, meaning very clearly he's poskening connected to Beit Yosef on the sole reason that it's Kabbalistic. And that is the chain royal enug. And guess what? The chain pasuk ben ishchai. His two, the two major Svarti Kabbalistic influence poskim that paskin this way. So what's the problem? So Rabbi Avadya says, he quotes this, he says, Ulum adra v'lechot negin melochim v'loi vosh. The Rabbi post rishon spirele desagin lana tamid out lama alma ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, right? He says, I'm not going to be embarrassed. I'm going to fight. No. So what does he do? Can't do that, can he? So he can, but he can't. Why? Because there's a tension. There's a tension. So what does Rav Avadya do? Because remember, what here goes against his rule of Beit Yosef. It goes against his rule of following Kabbalah. But on the other hand, what's pushing him is he also wants great pan Sephardi minhag. And the reality on the ground is that almost all Sephardim say it. But why do they say it? Because of the Arizal. Good. So what does Rav Avadya do? Let's see if you remember from last year what happens when a posse gets stuck, and I want to show you, right? This is a good example of where this tension can happen. So what did he do? Very good. Is he said that because it's the Sephardi Minhag, even though the Sephardi Minhag is based for, according to him, on wrong premises, because it's influenced by Kabbalah Keneged Halacha, since the Ashkenazim follow it, based on the Gaonim. And according to the Gaonim, it's in the Gemara, therefore, what's his out? That even the Beit Yosef would change his mind if in fact, the Gaonim were right. I mean, it's simply a question of it's in the Gemara. And he says, well, if Gantz Klal Yisrael has the minog to say it, it must be that's evidence that the Gaonim are right and it's in the Gemara. But you see what he's doing, right? You see how... But what's my point? Well, why is this example important? Because on paper, does Rav Avadya believe that Kabbalah influences his Pesach? No, he thinks that's Usher. In practice, what does influence his Pesach? The Minhag. But what motivated the Minhag? Kabbalah. So the Minhag motivated Kabbalah forces him to what? To accept the Gaonic argument, which is halachic. But you understand, to say that, so if I asked you, is Rav Avadya influenced by Kabbalah? The answer is on paper, no. But that's what I'm telling you. Is just because someone thinks Kabbalah shouldn't be part of Pesach, doesn't mean that Kabbalah can't
get this way in next.
Right, can get in a certain way, right? So it gets an interesting ways.
Can a Pesach do that in order?
Yeah.
Because it sounds like Alpi Svar, he wouldn't have said that the Gaonim were right. He said it only because he tried to
wiggle. Now, what?
It sounded like Alpi Svar, he wouldn't have said the Gaonim were right. He was only saying
it because it's a combination of factors. Correct. Now, the Mishnah Brura follows, as I said, the middle position, which is, and this is essentially what you get, which is that you can accept it when it doesn't go against halacha, but even then, the question is how much you accept it. So the Re'im, for example, says, Reuven Mizrahi says, look, the Kabbalistic traditions are important, but maybe they're only for the Kedoshim, like the really holy people. And therefore, it's, no, so he says, therefore, maybe it's a good thing to do, all things being equal, but it's not going to be binding, right? It's not something you'd push against, but it's not something that would be binding. So that's the type of psak you find in general in the Mishnah Berura, right? Which is, and to be fair, the Beit Yosef, where Kabbalah is a source, sometimes we take it halachically, and sometimes we take it as a chumra. Again, I'm oversimplifying this, but I'm just giving an introduction. You find this in a lot of posts, and this is a pretty standard one. Now, the interesting thing I'll just throw out there, because we don't have so much time right now, is that often people will say that the main, like, they're, right? So, example, right? So, the Rebbe Elazar Mizrahi says we can't force anyone to follow Kabbalah, because it's meant to be esoteric. The Radbaz goes a little bit stronger, and the Radbaz says, no, we do force it, but only if it's not against halachic texts, right? So I'll just read you a key line in the Radbaz. And he says, this is Chelek Dalet Tshuva Pei. He says, "Ulatmi muchumrani no egoto v'much kula lo achushla." Right? If it's a kula, reject it. But if it's just, but it's a chumra, so then it's legitimate to. Yeah, exactly. So then it's legitimate. Incorporate. And again, that position is basically the position of the Beit Yosef. That's the position of the Mishnah Berurah. There's another way that you could take in Kabbalah as a middle position, and that is that the Zohar can have extra weight when the Gemara isn't clear. Mm. Right? The Gemara isn't clear, so then it can be a particularly powerful source to push you to interpret the Gemara, right? And this is what the Yavit says. Meaning, kaze in suffix shigam balazor atzma durav guvre. Right, so he said, "What the Zohar is strong and da da da." So he says, "Masha enkim welcome to the Rei Talmud Stilmim." Right, so he says, "Lo look for Allah welcome to Cholkan al Chaverav." Masha enkain. Right, no, sorry. So that's far I said before, remember, that we don't paskin by Shimon because he's a Tana and we reject him? So the Yavid says that. He says, yeah, well, he was great, except lo asu maisa kedvarov, we don't follow Reb Shimon. But if there's an ambiguity, says so then lo likva alach makam shechokan av chavirav, you can't paskin like it when his friends disagree with him. Mashehinkim makam shedivrei ha-talmud stumim v'chatuvim v'sovim perushim shonim. But where the Gemara is unclear and it can handle different interpretations, v'amefarshim nidchul kir havanatam, and the mefarshim were pushed up against a wall, lefarshol pi tfarazam v'lo yadu me'azor klum, and they didn't know the Zohar, v'zachinu she'ra'inu azohar, and then we have the Zohar, and that clarifies in one direction. So he says, fine. So there, right, so these are a series of, now, some people take a stronger version of this, like Marav Panau says even more than that, right? So we have a range here. We have, you can take it as a chumra, you should take it as a chumra, you take it when the Gemara, when the psak is unclear, or if at all possible, this is an even stronger version, this is Marav Panau, if at all possible to read the Gemara in such a way that it doesn't contradict the Zohar, you should, meaning in principle, you don't possibly like the Zohar, but if there's a way to Paskin like the Zohar, then you should stretch. Now, in general, when people give shir, I find, on halacha and Kabbalah, they hold up as if the greatest example ever is Tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Oh, because it's based in Kabbalah. But as Yaakov Katz notes in his article on, in his book, rather, Halacha v'Kabbalah, it's really a bad example. Just a bad example. Why is it a bad example? Because it's not a strong case at all. What is the case of Tefillin Chol HaMoed? It's a straight up machloket rishonim. So what is the Zohar coming in to do?
Just to settle it?
Just as one factor in settling a machloket rishonim. So like, as we saw, that's like more, right? And if you read the Beit Yosef, that's what he says. People hold it up as if it's the example. It's not. It's not the extreme. Again, the extreme case would be when you find Kabbalah, we follow it no matter what. That's positions like the Masad Binyam that we started with. The Beit Yosef brings in the Zohar here. I'll just read you. Achshav nagu kol ben Israel shalon anichem b'chol HaMoed. Nowadays, the minhag in all Sfarad is not to wear it on Chol HaMoed. Shemi kol ben anichem b'chol HaMoed. The Be'er Rosh. They used to pass the Rosh and wear it. Then they found Rishon Bar Yochai in the Zohar, who said it's also Nimnu mila anichem chol moed. And he says, "Umei achar shem b'tamuda tidan lo nidbar zin ze beferush." And since the Gemara isn't clear, me yarav libo lo geshet lavor b'kum vaseh al divrei rishim baruchai hamaflek kol kach b'israel nechtan. So then, why should you go against rishim baruchai who's so machmir on this? Meaning, what is the Beis Yosef saying? Look, halachically it could go either way. The Gemara silent; it's a machlok rishonim, and the Zohar is very, very, very harif that you shouldn't wear it. So he's like, okay, so we'll paskin against the rush, right? You understand? People hold this up as if it's a good example. It's not a good example. Right? It's not a good example because it's an example of the weak form. Right? So again, to summarize, what's the range? Right? And again, we can do more of this or you can suffice for the range and I can send you Makari, you can read it. So you have all the way at one extreme, you have people like the Masa B'Yamin who say, always. The slightly less, which is Pana, which is, in principle, we don't follow Kabbalah, but if there's any way of putting the Gemara in the Kabbalah, then we will, which is pretty strong. Right, then there's the other extreme, which is Kabbalah Allah have nothing to do with each other. That's Chatam Sofer. But then you have all the middle positions, like if the Gemara is unclear, you can follow Kabbalah. Or Kabbalah is a reason to accept a Chumrah. Either you have to or maybe you should. Right, those are weaker. Right, it's incorporated as weaker. Or then you have the weird cases, like the case of Notin Lav Koach, where the Minhag is really influenced by Kabbalah, but you could construct halachic arguments that are not based on Kabbalah to justify it. So then, right, things get complicated because Kabbalah is really pushing on the minhag. Right? And then it might influence you to accept certain other halachic argumentation. But again, when people talk about the classic examples, I think the two that I hear most often are Hanotin Leif Koach, which is also not a pure example because Ashkenazim say it for non-Kabbalistic reasons, and they even have a text in the Gemara that says it, which really complicates the sugya, and that's why in the end, Rebbe Ovadia ends up accepting it. And Tefillin Chol Hamoed, which is not a good example, as Yaakov Katz points out, because it's a case where the Gemara is silent and there's a machloket rishonim. Right? Reb Chaim, right? The Rav quotes Reb Chaim is thinking that you shouldn't wear tefillin on Chol Hamoed mitard vadai, because he thinks that the Lomdus is so obviously correct that you don't wear tefillin on Chol Hamoed that he doesn't think you even have to be worried about Safek D'Oraita. It's obvious that you don't have to. Right, that's how the Rav is quoted, quotes Reb Chaim. So it's right. This is not something based on his understanding of the Gemara in Eruchin by Hallel. Right. So Bichlal, but those are in general the two probably most popular examples you hear. But the truth is, like I said, when you actually look at the sugya, they're not great examples because they're relatively weak cases. Right. There are cases where halachic arguments either are equal or can be easily mustered not through Kabbalistic means, and then you're in that middle ground. Right? The purists, but to be fair, most poskim, I think, will usually be somewhere in that middle camp, in one of those middle formulations. Because look, again, even Rav Ovadia, who's pretty strong in the Chatam Sofer camp, he accepts the Beis Yosef as the posing, and the Beis Yosef and the Mishnah Berurah, right? They incorporate these things to whatever extent they do. But I think a lot of poskim are going to find themselves somewhere in those middle things. That's just a general contour of the argument. Okay, and like I said, it doesn't. What should become clear from this analysis is this is the question of the philosophical kind of Kabbalah is not relevant. This is a methodological question. Okay.
If you don't believe that these are legitimate sources, then it would affect it, though.
It would probably affect it, but it wouldn't be a slam dunk. Right? I think that's what I would say. Right.
Like, what would be the extent though that like it's a valid minhag at this point?
Look. Let's take the case of Tefillin Chol Hamoed. Let's say you had someone who doesn't accept Kabbalah, but he's a brisker, and he follows Reb Chaim. So now what? He's going to say, well, I live in Yerushalayim, or put it this way. Wearing Tefillin Chol Hamoed, many people point out, is at this point is basically Minhag Eretz Yisrael. There's basically no community in Eretz Yisrael, with the exception of certain like Yekesh shuls that wear it, right? So many people think it's Usher, but didn't Minhag HaMakom. To wear it, right? I've heard Poskim make that argument. Exactly. So now you're going to tell me, but it developed because of Beis Yosef being so much in the Zohar. So now I deny the Minhag HaMakom? No. Right? Like, whatever the Minhag developed, right, there's perfectly, right?
That you still have
correct. So that's what I'm saying is, are you going to, I don't think it's right to say, well, I don't like the source, and therefore anything that's based on it doesn't exist. Because, like I said, like Rav Avadya does. Well, maybe the minhag is based on Kabbalah, but it could have been constructed. In fact, for many people, it is constructed on other sources. So what? I'm going to discount the people who did it on Kabbalah because I think Kabbalah isn't part of Pesach? Like, no, that has to at least weigh on you. Now, if you thought there was no way of justifying the position without Kabbalah, that would be a different story. Correct. Because then...
it's like really like fitted in.
Correct. So that presumably the Chatam Sofer would already tell you. If you can't justify it without Kabbalah, Chatam Sofer would say, forget it. Right? But if you can justify it halachically, and it just happens to be that what popularized the minhag was Kabbalah, right? Right? Meaning, Tefillin and Chol Hamoed, right? Again, Reb Chaim, based fully on his understanding of the Sugyan Erechin, thought it was a Vadai. Nothing to do with Kabbalah. It happens to align with the Beis Yosef thought it was a 50-50, and the Zohar pushed him that direction. Reb Chaim, it was a Vadai based on the Sugyan Erechin. Right? Like, okay. Anyways, go have dinner. Go.